You are listening to Mark Hatmaker Rough and Tumble Raconteur. This is a grab bag of old school Western martial arts, resurrected indigenous ways and empirical musings tinged with a heavy dose of respect, admiration, let's call it hero worship, for these hosses of yore. Hey crew, this is Mark Hatmaker coming to you from the Command Sharia. Today, let's do a little bit of a twofer. I think in our last episode, I covered some of at least what were, in my opinion, some of boxing's dirtiest fights. Of course, there's dirtier than that. I was trying to go with things you could at least probably dial up in the old YouTube and have a look, see for yourself. There's others that are, the reporting of them are far more dirty than that, far more interesting too. But not everything has got the opportunity for us to put our eyes on them at the moment. Let's pick up where we left off, and then after we do another handful of these, gotta move off into discussing a little bit of some advice from warriors of the past to inform we warriors of the present day. So a little bit of, you know, eye candy if you want to dial up on the video, maybe brain candy if we want to think about it. Next fight I want to talk about occurred on October 21st, 1940. Let's talk about Teddy Yarrows versus Lloyd Marshall II. Well, actually, not the second. It's the second bout they had. See, Marshall started these little festivities with a ball-busting shot in the first round, which it cost him the round. But, man, it hit hard, and it sure looks intentional. And then Yarrows, then he's a little bit past his prime, a little overweight. He resorts to eye gouging and then scraping Marshall's face with the laces of his gloves. And then another point, Yarrows, he shoves Marshall to the canvas with a big, it's heavy, it's a heavy shove, man. The referee, Red Robinson, he rules it as a knockdown. That's how hard the guy goes down, give him a shot to recover from it. Then Yarrows tries to repeat the maneuver, but he was penalized for a, quote, attempted tripping, unquote. How many times do you hear that pop up in these days? And then both fighters took turns at trying to shove each other through the ropes. Marshall lost another round for fouling. And then some observers suspect the bout was a fixed job gone awry, with both fighters working hard to be disqualified rather than just actually. Well, you get the point. If you've read the novel or seen the film The Harder They Fall, you know what I'm talking of here. The Pittsburgh Press reported that the fight was, quote, even hardened ringsiders booed lustily in disgust, unquote. Now, Yarrows won this thing on points, but both fighters were suspended, and likely rightfully so. Let's move on to the next one. It's a really dirty fight, a lot of one that, of which that we're probably all familiar with if you're any kind of boxing aficionado whatsoever. This is the fourth meetup with Willie Pep versus Sandy Sadler, the one on September 26, 1951. Now, anything resembling boxing that may have occurred during this bout, that's a coincidence, man. And we know that both these gents can, you know, can throw hands wonderfully. But, you know, Pep and Sadler had already met three times, and their distinction for being dirty, well, it came around in the fourth bout. I mean, we're talking, this is a brawl, man. There's headlocks, hammerlocks, and lots of old-fashioned schoolyard tripping back and forth here. I don't know the featherweight legends here. They just were inspired by all the pro wrestling at the time. I don't know what was going on. They just threw it all away. Kitchen sink is in. Pep even tried to trip Sandler from behind while riding him somewhat piggybackish. It's just crazy, crazy stuff. Now, Pep, who suffered a horrible cut of his right eye, finally quit on a stool after the ninth round. And then the New York City Athletic Commission revoked Pep's license and suspended Sadler. That's how dirty the damned thing was. Let's move on to another one. This is absolutely astonishing. It occurs on November 15th, 1940. Fritzy Zivic versus Al Bummy Davis. Bummy, of course, hopefully being not something his parents christened him with. All right. This fight is what the United Press called, quote, a berserk back alley performance, unquote. It's pretty close to the mark, too. Davis became unhinged during the Madison Square Garden bout, and Zivic had dominated the first round, putting Davis through a righteous three-minute demonstration of thumbs and elbows. And not interested in the finer points of dirty fighting, Davis responded to the second round by smashing left hooks into Zivic's groin. Now, some reporters had Zivic launching as many as 10 consecutive low blows. Okay, now when the referee Billy Kavanaugh disqualifies when the boxer known in the newspapers, this is Bummy, went after Zivic again. Ringside cops struggled to pry the fighters apart. Keep in mind, this is after the damn thing's over, while Davis's handlers brawled with sports writers and fans threw debris into the ring. As Davis was being dragged away by security, he landed a kick to Kavanaugh's leg, either by accident or for good measure. Davis later told Commissioner Bill Brown that he'd been blinded by Zivick's thumbs, therefore he didn't know his punches were landing so low. Brown didn't buy it, and he revoked Davis's license, suspending him. Revoked the license and handed him a stiff fine. Zivick went unpunished. Perhaps Brown thought Zivick had suffered enough. There's obviously way more dirty fights in the earlier history, and obviously we know there's incidences of dirty fights in the more recent era. I'm less interested in the recent era, at least that's where I am now. I mean, of course, if I wanted to mention some, I would probably go with Riddick Bowe versus Andrew Gallardo on July 11th of 96, or Tyson versus Evander Holyfield 2 in 1997. We all know what happened with that one. So I really want to kind of shine a spotlight on some maybe earlier things that are a little bit less known. And there's far actually meaner things that go on in the Frontier Rough and Tumble arena, which we cover all the time in our Black Box volumes, as we're actually, you know, taking techniques and tactics from that, because they're so damn street ready, because, you know, none of it was ever meant to go. You know, we got to keep in mind, as wonderful as boxing and is, and how punishing wrestling is, it's still the cleaned up version that you could have children learn. And that's not knocking. Given short shrift, we know these two combat arts are astonishingly useful. But if you can let your kids teach it, that's how much we've cleaned it up. Now, let's go on and talk about some of this warrior lifestyle. We're actually going to wander through this a little bit, and we'll ask the question. Sometimes others ask, and sometimes we ask ourselves whenever it's a punishing day, why do we train? I mean, why do we devote so much time to matters of martial arts and times of harmony? Well, the short answer is, that's what those who are possessed of a warrior spirit do, right? I mean, this is, you just kind of feel compelled to do it. You don't really have a good answer. We can kind of, you know, cogitate it out and give a logical one. But the thing is, we just feel compelled to do it. We might be answering a call that has always been around. Now, this answer of we just do, that this is what warriors do, well, that's a bit incomprehensible answer to those who don't feel that tug at them. But let's go into our first teacher. We're going to talk about the samurai. This is Oda Nobunaga. And he was fond of quoting the 50 years of a man's life. Compare this with taking the nation, a dream, an illusion. When born to life, will surely perish. But he's talking, obviously 50 years, and he's talking about a lifespans then, even though people could exceed that. That could be the average of it, particularly if you're a warrior. This was a line from a quotation from a no play called Atsumori. He's referring to when he says, compared with taking the nation, is simply supplying context that life is short. We probably pay too much attention to grand schemes and things, getting too involved in political campaigns that really have nothing to do with this, or dreams that might never be realized. But that's the path of the warrior, to behave with the grace. There's a Buddhist admonition. It says here, quote, treat every act you do as if the fate of the world depended upon it, then laugh at yourself for thinking that anything you do matters, unquote. This kind of captures it. You're compelled to do it. Responsibility and duty ask you to be involved. But don't take yourself seriously. That's the razor's edge, the serious, and also the playfulness of the warrior's life to invest in. It's similar to teacher number two, the Lakota warrior. Let's talk about Crazy Horse. Here's the line, Hokahe, which Oglala Sioux translates to, today is a good day to die. Now, keep in mind, today is a good day to die. This is not a death wish statement. It's not something you yell and shout going, oh, here I go, in a blaze of glory. It's also not an existential statement saying, oh, today is a good day to die. That's not that either. It's the attitude of a warrior who knows that we're all born to die, and tick-tock each second closer to that destiny. Hokahe means you wake up every day, you want to live life to the fullest. One who is steeped in that fact lives every moment closer to dignity and duty. You waste not a drop, man. You could die on the battlefield or smelling flowers. The thing is, you do it all with absolute attention. So Hokahe is the investment of the loving bold. Let's go next to a philosopher. Let's go to the ancient Greeks, the ancient Hellenes. Let's go actually to Socrates. This Socrates is the one who we have from the Memorabilia by Xenophon, who is actually a little bit more interesting to me than the Socrates we find in Plato. Quote, this is from Socrates. There is no struggle apart from war and no undertaking in which you will be worse off by keeping your body fit. For everything men will do, the body is useful. Unquote. Now, you got to keep in mind, you know, Socrates was a warrior, and we got to forget Plato was actually a nickname. It means wide shoulders. He was a wrestler. There is the fields of philosophy and body cultivation went hand in hand. We want to be fit to fight? Well, be fit for the fight. You want to be useful to others? Well, be fit for the use. We want to be able to enjoy the walk to the mountain view with a child's never seen it before. You got to be fit. This doesn't let any of us off the hook. Even you think, well, this is not my purview. Well, this is, you know, what life is. You keep the body up to snuff the best you can, the mind's better off for it. We know how if you just get a toothache, how much that takes your attention from everything. So our job is to pretty much say, hey, let's stay fit as we can so we can put our investment and our attention in the outside world. Because we know any little aches and pains that we have, any huff and puff we have, we kind of internalize that and start thinking on that too much. We want to be the outside of it. Let's go to our next teacher. This is we're going to actually go to Major General Sir James Wolfe, lived 1727 to 1759. A little bit of a longer quote here. It's, quote, that variety incident to a military life gives our profession some advantage over those of a more even and consistent nature. We have all our passions and affections roused and exercised, many of which must have wanted their proper employment, had not suitable occasions obliged to exert them. Unquote. Let's stop there for a moment. He's talking about if you're living the warrior life, that means, you know, pushing yourself to the edge, actually getting some, living what it feels, you know, tastes what it is to be fearful. Well, hey, is this going to hurt? This is going to go wrong? That even could be, oh, I'm climbing this mountain. I'm climbing this canyon. This next step going to be the tough one there? You got to taste it. Be on the edge with it. We have a better shot than people. They appreciate life more than pray. Maybe those who don't push themselves as hard. Let's go back to the general here. Quote, few men are acquainted with a degree of their own courage till danger prove them, and are seldom justly informed how far the love of honor and the dread of shame are superior to the love of life. Unquote. Let's go back again. Often we can say all we want about, I think I'm brave. I bet it'd be great. I would behave nobly and responsibly. Well, those are all guesses. None of us really know. They're hopeful guesses, and I hope that's true for all of us, but we don't know to actually kind of test ourselves a bit. Back to the general, quote, constancy of temper, patience, and all the virtues necessary to make us suffer with a good grace are likewise parts of our character and frequently called in to carry us through unusual difficulties, unquote. It's a fine that we test ourselves and we don't find the good grace to go through them with uncomplainingly. At least that's according to Sir James Wolfe. And I think that's true. Those who test themselves give play to more passions than the sedentary and wallflowers will ever assume. You get to test them to their limits. We provide those chances for expression with activities or expeditions or experiences beyond the ken of the day-to-day. And that cannot just be martial training. Remember, the warriors of the past and the present, the indigenous, were also testing themselves in other fields. It could be the long, it could be the vision quest. It could be, you know, in Fort Benning, Georgia, sending folks into the swamps. They go out here and survive. It's not all, just not warfare. It's testing yourself. See what you're made of. You know, push that. Find out what the metal, the pedal of the metal actually finds out what's going on and test your metal with the M-E-T-T-L-E. Few will know if they are actually courageous or up to snuff or capable of honor or will rise to dignity if the constant tester sells. Seldom, if ever, applied. It is easier to forge the virtues in hot fires than to proclaim them, but never employ them. Those who lament, oh, this is a hot day, or that eclipse traffic, that sucks, or can you believe what that guy over there did? This all shows a virtue untested. The warrior is really more concerned about constant improvement of the self. And if we are annoyed at small things, the heat of the day and all this, it lets us know, well, this is a first world problem, man. You've not really tested yourself. Come on, you're off track. We are wise to invest in virtue training via hardship, be it martial or be it a challenging exploration. Here's a quote here. It's actually from Major John Alexander Hotel. He penned this for the West Point Alumni Quarterly. I believe it's 1970. Quote, and yet I deny that I died for anything. That for is all caps when he penned this. And yet I deny that I died for anything. Not my country, not my army, not my fellow man. I lived, all caps, L-I-V-E-D. I lived for these things. And the manner in which I chose to do it involved the very real chance that I would die in the execution of my duties, unquote. Now, Major Huddle died in a helicopter crash about a year after composing that piece. Again, he urges us not to a death wish, but to the life wish. We must take death seriously enough to want to live while we can, not to be living with our fingers everlastingly on our pulses. I believe it was Conrad had said, we must embrace our honor, our virtue, our duty, our passion seriously enough to want them now, today, not some down the road that ever recedes. We invest in life by investing in today. I'm going to end with an absolutely unworthy person to discuss anything about this, and that's me. My own words, not nearly worthy enough for the company we've been discussing, but hubris prevails. I got to proclaim, I'm on a journey to live this life and love and explore this martial life to the best of my meager abilities. I'm not comparing myself to them. I'm trying to follow in those footsteps. I continue to invite others to enjoy this route with me. You included, listener. I do this via the posts, blog essays, podcasts, and for the truly serious, the Black Box Brotherhood membership subscription program, where, you know, we do print material, video material, and everything to live this life. Now, the Black Box Brotherhood, the investment is monetized. commentary as opposed to all this freebie stuff we give out, but it's truly one of savings. I mean, all these new products that come along in each and every month, well, if you'll notice, the Black Box Brotherhood's receiving those up to 40% off the sales price. Just saying, if one is picking and choosing these volumes at random, the wise one says, well, man, go the whole hog, sign up for the subscription service, you get it all, wind up spending far less in the long run. Anyway, if you want more info on that particular Marshall investment, I'll put a link in the show notes there. But mainly here, we want to talk about some of those boxing's dirtiest fights. Enjoy that sojourn in history. And for those who have stuck around long enough, we've perhaps cogitated on what some of these warriors have to teach us. Now let's go out there and have one hell of a lived day. Let's earn this thing, guys. Mabitsi ara hiitsi. Well, if you dig what we just discussed today, I'd like to invite you to like and subscribe to the podcast. Hell, support it if you want. I'm not your dad. Do what you want. And if you're a glutton for punishment, just visit our website, extremeselfprotection.com. You'll find links to the blog, all of our products, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of more pages of like musics.